Today is what we call the observance day, and it's the we have a ritual that we bhikkhus do every fortnight on the lunar halves. We recite our Patimokkha rules. They're the rules and protocols that we live by. And who's doing it today? So the ritual, just for you who don't know it, is that we, the bhikkhus come together and we do a ritual of, how should we say, mutual, it's not confession because that sounds very Catholic, it's a mutual recognition, I think would be a better way to put it. A mutual recognition of our commitment to this particular way we live our lives, and a recognition of the structures, the what we call the Vinaya and Akawat, the ways of the monastery and the ways of being a bhikkhu. And those rules, some are moral, some are merely etiquette. So there's a whole range of rules. And so we have a ritual where we where the junior monk bows to the senior monk, and we make a kind of formula of recognizing, and if we've done anything which has been against our principles, we try to acknowledge that, and so that we become more mindful in the future. And so having done that, then we sit together, and one of the bhikkhus, if there is a quorum, and a quorum requires four bhikkhus, if there's a quorum of four bhikkhus, then one of the bhikkhus chants the Patimokkha, which is quite a challenging piece of memorizing. It's about 45 minutes to 50 minutes of uposatha karana to bupina vabidam pupakitam katapam hoti tantana samachananche tatapati puchalananche, and so on for 45 to 50 minutes. And that's in the Pali language. And it's a very ritualized thing. It's not like we're all kind of, you know, having a notebook and checking off, and you know, it's not so much that. But it is a sort of a review for each of us. Okay, how am I living this life? Am I living it as impeccably as possible? And then acknowledging that to other bhikkhus. And there's something very powerful about coming together with a group of men who have the same aspiration, just to see the road, to see other monks doing the work. And it's a kind of both an inspiration and also a protection. So we call it samana sanya, the perception of being a samana or renunciant or a monastic or a bhikkhu. And that's an important part of our monastic life, is that we have samana sanya. This is one of the things I really missed living with my mom, the presence of other monks, just as reflections. And so that ritual, I've been doing it for 38 years. You imagine you do something wholesome like that for 38 years. And it's not just, it might sound like, it can get like just parroting something, of course, like all rituals, but actually if it's done with sincerity, it's very, very uplifting, very helpful. So there's, as I was saying yesterday, the idea of remembering or reinstilling your intention in the practice, whether it's in a sitting, reintending, you know, like in the metta practice, picking up another person, whether it's in a longer stretch for the whole retreat or for a lifetime, the importance of really clarifying your direction and making clear your intentions and continuing trying to honor them, and realizing that you can't do it 100%, but you keep trying. And then over the years, and it is, you know, it's at least a one lifetime practice, whatever you believe. So you have to, you know, I think you have to look at it as like you're in it for the long haul if it's going to work. Then even if one has, you know, really stubborn habitual mindsets, you have this determination, just keep doing it. Making the intention, keep trying to move to the wholesome, abandon the unwholesome, just keep hammering away, how long it takes. And Ajahn Sumedho has a kind of, he says it's like a rat gnawing through a wall. Not very pretty. You know, it's not like kind of, well, I'm so inspired, it's wonderful to be a bhikkhu. That doesn't last long, really. comes and goes, actually. But just the sort of more mature determination, okay, there is a goal, there is a path, I am inspired by this, this is important for me. And then working on those aspects of one's consciousness which you need to work on. And that of course brings a lot of self-respect. That brings a lot of confidence just in giving it a go. If we have some deeper insight into the path, if we have no insight into the path, then we wouldn't be here. If we have some deeper insight into the path and the possibility of human consciousness, and we don't honor that, then after a while I don't think we feel very good. We don't feel very good about ourselves, and then quite often we need to go to compensations, such as the fridge or, you know, whatever distractions a person chooses. So in Buddhism we'd say human birth is really valuable, really valuable, and then to honor that and do the best you could. And so that's kind of what our gathering is about. But all of that's to say that you can't be here between 5 and 7. Because we need the hall. This hall, we have what we call the word sima, means boundary. And in our Theravada tradition, we have what you call it, a kind of sangha business boundary. So an ordination, there are different ways to define boundaries, but ordination quite often is done in a hall, and the hall has what they call sima stones. These are boundary stones which are placed around the building or on the walls of the building as a way of marking the boundary of our ritual. So it's a kind of ritualized boundary. So there are stones here which mark the boundary. And so we try to do all our sangha rituals that we have, various kinds, we try to do it within that boundary. So it's a very high church. Yeah. I kind of like spiritual theater in the good sense, that you have iconography. You have the beautiful body language. You have choreography, right? But not in a frivolous sense, but in a kind of respectful sense. So we have a choreography in the evening meeting, right? We come, we bow. There's the request of the talk. There's the talk. Then there's the recognition of the talk. Then we bow to the senior monk, whoever it might be. And that's the kind of, there's a bit great beauty in that. We could just get together and chat. That'd be all right too, right? You'd probably get enlightened just as well. But there's something about a ritualized form of congregation, which we are involved in, which I think is quite lovely, because without having to explain it, we form an assembly, a group, a sangha of people with a common purpose, common goal, common work. And so there's a kind of lovely camaraderie that comes through that, which is different than just getting to know each other's personal stories. In fact, if we got to know each other's personal stories, maybe the camaraderie would break up. So it's sometimes good not to know. But, you know, that our aspiration is something deeper than our personalities. Because at a personality level, you know, you like some people, you don't like some people. But this is beyond that. It's kind of beyond who I like or what culture I'm from or what gender I'm from or what nationality. It's kind of beyond those. It's like a transcendent aspiration that we're sort of involved in. And so the chanting and the bowing, all these are very beautiful ways of manifesting that. Not necessary, but I certainly have grown to really love them. There was a neighbor who lived in the first house on the road, not the house down below, but the first house on the road as you come, go out the gates on the right hand side. And they were still in India at partition. They were an old couple, and we got to know them, and we'd go and have tea with them, and among other things he had an elephant foot umbrella stand. So he was really from the Raj. elephant foot umbrellas. Yeah. All right. So, and we get to know them very, very nicely, and they're a very sweet couple. And one day he dropped dead, literally just at the front of his house. And they were kind of nominally Anglican, but not really. They didn't really know the minister. And I wasn't quick enough to say, well, we can do the funeral here. I wish I had been. I didn't want to be sort of intrusive. So they had a funeral. I went to it, and they had a funeral celebrant. And it was such a pathetic ceremony, because it didn't have any heart. It was like something you had to do. And the funeral celebrant, I thought he was a pretty dodgy, kind of cynical guy. And I'm sitting there, oh, so, and this poor woman, she's all alone in this, oh. And I go, hug her or something. And that one, it was kind of really, I saw, yeah, to have a culture, which we, you know, we have a Buddhist culture, that recognizes rites of passage, that has ways to honor that and do that, to do that. It's a wonderful, wonderful cultural part of being part of a Buddhist enterprise. And that's the kind of richness of what we get from Thailand or Sri Lanka or wherever, that kind of richness of a tradition, which isn't just about kind of getting your act together. Right? It isn't just about intellectually having clever ideas. It's more of the heart, more of the whole kind of human predicament that we are involved in. So you see, like here, you see now some people really enjoy offering food. So today we had three restaurants, Thai restaurants, came and offered you that wonderful food. And one of the Thai ladies who's been supporting us since 1985, Id, she said, yeah, we Thais, we're not so much into meditation, we like to feed you guys. And she actually said that. She said, yeah, we heard you're having a retreat. So we thought, oh, great, we can feed them. Now that's, you know, that mindset is very noble. And they put themselves down and said, oh, no, meditation's too hard, you guys do it. But actually, that's a really, really noble mindset, isn't it? And we'll feed you so you can get enlightened. Oh. And so a place like this, because it is multicultural, and it is, you know, it's got these lovely elements of Asia and the West, that the people who like meditation can inspire people who don't, and people who have that sort of that kind of boundless generosity can, you know, instruct other people. It's kind of wonderful, wonderful part of being here. So let's go do the walking, 45 minutes.